Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Your official station to talk New York Rangers.
I think it all comes down to Chris Kreider. I think I put the bet in. Rangers going to win. Kreider, anytime goal. And, you know, let's go Rangers.
The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Love Don Henley, Boys of Summer. A lot of good covers of this song, too. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Got you for two more hours as we will take you to the warm-up show live from Belmar, New Jersey for kickoff the summer. We're playing our own summer songs. Taking me back to my days running the board for Mike Francesa. This is what we did every Friday of Memorial Day. We would play his favorite summer songs, Mungo Jerry in the Summertime. We'll play that one too. But it would always end with the Summer of 69. We open the show with it, having a little bit of fun as we get you to the weekend of this 10-pole mark of a baseball season. And right now, the Yankees are in first place, the Mets not so much. And both have important stretches here. The Yankees will go on the West Coast. And the Mets will stay home and have the most important 10-game stretch of their season. For me, this is where the season is made or lost for the New York Mets. They have a 10-game homestand against the San Francisco Giants, where really this poor play all began, the LA Dodgers, and the Arizona Diamondbacks. And they are now 7 games under 500. And if this offense continues to be this bad, and if this team continues to play the brand of baseball they've played, which is, I mean, losing it in every which way, they've played terrible in the field. They've made blunders out there. They've made blunders on the base paths, hitting into, you know, these double play. That double play was atrocious between J.D. Martinez and Marte. It's almost, I mean, they've made terrible mistakes. Diaz is lost. Lindor is awful. McNeil is awful. Alonso's having a miserable walk year, and he's probably on his way to walk out of here. It's just a miserable time for the New York Mets. And last year's June swoon ended the season for them, and right now, heading into the end of May, early June, with the longest homestand of the year, a 10-game set, 3 against San Francisco And you are going to see Hicks and Webb for them. Three against the Dodgers, and it looks like you're lined up to face Yamamoto and Glasnow. And then a four-game stretch against the defending National League champ, struggling a bit, two games under 500, Arizona Diamondbacks. This is the season. You cannot come out of this any worse than where you are. 500 is the bare minimum. You cannot knock off 10 games off the schedule, 10 home games off the schedule. Head into the rest of June worse off than 7 games under 500. It can't happen. And Lindor has got, I mean, we all know how important Lindor is and how bad he's been this year. He has got to figure out on this homestand. They've got to play Vientos at third base every single game. He's the only person right now who's given you a spark. Alonso hit a home run the other day. He needs to continue to play well, or at least get hot here and hit some home runs. They need to figure out a way to win some of these games, because this is the stretch that will dictate their entire season for me. And the Yankees are in first place. Everything's great with them. Even for the general manager, Brian Cashman, everything seems to be great. Now, listen, we've talked about the owner in the comments. I talked about it yesterday. I'll go over it again here. It's just because I heard again, I love Sal. I do. And he's not alone in this narrative. Everybody, the minute the comments came out from Hal Steinbrenner about the payroll, everybody jumps to the idea, well, now they're not getting Juan Soto. A couple days ago, he mentioned he wants to re-sign him, which to me, you do not come out. I mean, Hal Steinbrenner needs to just stop talking. But Hal Steinbrenner comes out. I don't think he would come out and tell you it's important for us to re-sign Soto. We are going to openly talk to Soto about extending him. He's a generational player. It's different. We typically don't do this. We think it can be a distraction, and we're not going to have it typically, but we feel like he's worthy of doing it. Saying all that to leading everybody to go, hey, here you go. Oh, and Scott Boras said, hey, my phone's always open. And Soto said, hey, talk to Scott. I love it here. Oh, man, Soto's going to sign an extension. And then to the next day where he talks about the payroll can't stay this high forever, and suddenly now they're not going to sign Soto. Now they're not going to sign anybody. He's going to be a Met, which Met fans, let me just say this to you too. It's so pathetic. I'm sorry. It's just absolutely pathetic. I appreciate what you're going through. And I know that right now, this year was kind of earmarked to be this kind of thing. Last year at the trade deadline, your owner told you this year might be like this. Now, you had hopes at the start of the year. Now the owner tells you he believes you're a playoff team. He does not. He does not. He's replying to stories that say blow it up with, we can't do it just yet. Wait. He does not believe you're a playoff team, even if he tells you so. And at the trade deadline last year, he told you this could be it. And Stearns came in. And yes, they told you they were going to try and compete while doing this. But ultimately, there was a chance for that. But right now, they are, as I said, a 10-game stretch away from finding the answer to that. And there's a decent chance the answer to that is no, that they're not going to compete, which means they are going to blow it up on some level. And I understand that your visions of this being the one bad year, or the next, you know, the most recent bad year, but the transition bad year. Other bad years were just bad years. You expected to win. This was going to be a transition type bad year. And so I understand that you were like, okay, we know we're going to have to take our, you know, medicine here. And that you hoped that the spoonful of sugar to help it go down is the idea that Juan Soto is going to be yours next year. And not only is Juan Soto going to be yours, but you are going to take him away from the New York Yankees. You are going to be the team that steps in, spends more money, flexes more muscle, and out Yankees the Yankees. And I know that sounds sexy. And I know that sounds like something that just would change the direction of the two franchises in some ways. And it would never be the same. It's like the 04 Red Sox. Once the cat's out of the bag, you can't put it back in. And now the rivalry is forever changed. And if the Mets could ever take away a generational 26-year-old superstar at just really the beginning of a Hall of Fame career, and a guy who's impacted the Yankees on such a level and the fan base has fallen in love with, if you could ever steal him away, what that would mean. How that would change things. The idea of how tightly you hold on to that is pathetic. And how I can't say anything about Juan Soto on social media without getting bombarded by Met fans saying, enjoy it while you can. It's embarrassing. It's unbecoming. Take your medicine. There is no spoonful of sugar. Your spoonful of sugar is that you do have an owner who will spend money, I suppose. Hasn't done much winning, but will spend some money. And you have one of the younger, smarter, most sought after executives in all the game. And he decided, really, to sit this one out, put his feet up, play his own favorite summer songs, and let it go, and then he'll figure it out. That was his plan. His plan was to not get in too deep. And he'll find out next year, and you will find out next year, how he goes about building this team from the bottom up. Because that's what it looks like is about to happen. But stop. Because I'm telling you right now, Hal Steinbrenner's comments from a few days ago about wanting to re-sign Juan Soto does not mean they're going to. And the idea that he's concerned about payroll moving forward does not mean they can't. And I'm trying to explain this to all of you who don't understand this, who don't think the math is mathing. Here's the thing. In his comments, Hal Steinbrenner never said that the role, that it needs to change next year. He doesn't say the payroll can't be like this ever again. What he's saying is the same thing he's been saying forever. Why he said it the other day, I have no idea. I don't want to be having this conversation. Rather be talking about Judge and already having a 100, a 1 OPS. But the reason why I believe that they are still going to sign Juan Soto despite trying to lower payroll is twofold. One, when they know they need to win, like they did last year, they will go above the payroll and the luxury tax. And if they have Stanton on the books and DJ on the books, they're not going to just not field a good team because, hey, we can't be over the tax threshold like we were last year. I don't think it's the case. The plan overall moving forward is that you don't need a $300 million payroll to win. You do not need to pay a 50% tax and give your opponents ability to either stuff their pockets with money or to spend it and try and beat you. You don't have to do that. That's how he feels. And if you look around the landscape of baseball, he's not wrong. The Diamondbacks were in the World Series. The Astros have owned this 10 years of baseball, and they let Correa go, and they let Springer go instead of spending money on those players, and they bring in Tucker and Alvarez. They find ways to still win without having an enormous payroll. The Yankees will always have a very competitive and high and top of, you know, top five bare minimum in all of baseball, but to go this high above the threshold is not something he plans on doing on a year-in and year-out basis just to win. That doesn't mean next year, if he has to sign Juan Soto and keep Stanton, that he won't be willing to do that for the short term. But overall, it's not feasible, which is a terrible word for him because it is feasible. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't feel he needs to do it. And I think though both of those are fair. Feasible is not fair because, yes, of course it's feasible. You make more money than anybody. You are the richest franchise in the sport. It's feasible to spend $400 million a year. You could. You don't want to. I get it. Nor do you have to. And that's why they're building the farm system. That's why they tried the baby bombers. And when it failed, you try again. And that's why they changed their development and the way they developed farm system and hitters in 2019. And now they have Volpe come up. And they have Dominguez coming up, who came and took the league by storm for a few weeks before getting hurt, and who everybody can't wait to get back into this lineup. And you're going to have Peraza. And when guys leave, when Rizzo leaves, you're going to replace him with a cheap first baseman or someone from your farm system. And you're going to let Torres go instead of giving him $20, $25 million a year. And you're going to let LeMahieu go and not replace third base with an all-star. And you're probably going to go let Clay Holmes leave and not pay your closer big-time money and instead do what you've been doing and find the nameless and the faceless and bring them here and turn them into good relievers. That's how you're going to keep Judge and Cole and Soto and pay the big generational stars by keeping the payroll low by using your farm system and cheaper players at other positions. That's how you do it. And that's how you build a veteran team mixed with youth. You have right now, theoretically, I know Wells is off to an ass start, but I think Wells will be fine. And plus, the catcher position, you don't expect much. Be a good catcher, maybe hit some home runs, and we're fine with it. You have the middle of the team can be the farm system. You could have Wells at catcher, Peraza and Volpe up the middle, and then Dominguez in center field with Soto and Judge on the corners. Replace Rizzo with a less expensive option at first. I mean, that's how you keep the payroll down and have stars. And that is their plan moving forward. But with certain contracts still on the books, DJ LeMahieu and Stanton namely, that might not happen next year. And the idea that he said, I don't remember him saying in these comments that, we have to be back under a normal, we have to be back to where I want to be next year. Overall, the plan will never be, we'll always have our payroll around $350 million. That's not the plan. It might have to be for the next year or two. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Let's go to Christian in Kings Park. What's up, Christian?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Just a couple quick thoughts on the Rangers.
Yeah.
One, what's up with their power play?
What's up with it? It's been pretty good in the playoffs. What's up with it?
Well, it didn't seem to do too well the other night because
they had two power plays. One of it was split by, which I hate. They had 90 seconds in the first period and 30 seconds in the second period, which always it becomes disjointed and very unsuccessful. I hate those split penalties. But they had two power plays and didn't get a goal. But I mean, in the Carolina series, you could argue it won them the series. They were scoring at like a 35% clip.
No, I know. I mean, I just think it's a different team than, because I'm an Islanders fan and I know that the Hurricanes are an interesting team, but the Panthers are something different, I think.
Right. Well, I understand also, that, but I'm just saying I think it's a bit premature one game into the series and two power plays into the series to go, hey, what's up with the Rangers power play? It's not like they're 0 for their last 13.
No, true. Also, what about rebounds on their breakaways? I mean, that to me seemed like something that they could have done better on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, unfortunately, the two guys who had the power, the breakaways are Schneider and what was his name? And Cooley. Those aren't real great offensive players. Schneider's had one goal in 28 career postseason games. But they need to get more shots to the goalie. They need to pepper Bobrovsky more. They need to get more shots at the goal. They need to figure out a way to get rebounds. They had that one flurry, and he made a couple of great saves, and they hit a couple posts, and they couldn't get that puck into the net. But they've got to be more ferocious. They've got to bring that edge. They got to get more pucks to the net. They got to get more guys in front of the net. They need to figure out a way to get on the power play more than twice. They need to score on the power play. Their penalty kill was phenomenal still, so I feel really good about that. They need to enhance their edge. They need to come with more intensity in this game than they did the first game. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think it's fair to just say, hey, what's up with the Rangers power play? It was very good in the last series. They've had two. They've only played one game. You want to say, then what's up with the Florida power play? Howard in Forest Hills. What's up, Howie?
Yeah, hi, Chris. I have two summer songs.
Two summer songs. Good.
Ready? Number one, I don't know if you have it, but it's really up there. Summer in the City by Loving Spoonful.
Yeah, you're the second one to mention. We haven't played it. Go ahead.
Okay. And another one is Summertime Blues.
Eddie Cochran, right?
Right. And then Blue Cheer had a hit with it in the 60s. And I think The Who covered it on the Live at Leeds album. So don't forget, there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
Yes. I do know Ain't No Cure for the Summertime Blues. The great Eddie Cochran. The first, here's a little bit of Beatle trivia for all you Beatle fans out there. I think you can stump me. The very first song that Paul played for John when he was auditioning to join the Quarrymen was 20 Flight Rock by Eddie Cochran. There you go. How about that for Beatles trivia, huh? You come and test me? You're going to say, oh, I got Beatles trivia for you? What's Paul McCartney's real name? What, do you think I'm stupid? I mean, insulting. And then I had the one guy who was dead wrong. Tell me, what's the only Beatles song that one Beatle played on? That there's only one Beatles song that there was only one Beatle who played on the song. That is incorrect. There are many songs that only one Beatle played on it. So if you're going to come at me right. 888-808-1019. But listen, again, the Rangers power play is still pretty good. I thought that second power play was good. The first power play, again, was disjointed. I hate that. There's nothing worse than taking a penalty with like a minute and 10 seconds left in the period. It's the worst. Especially, and the Rangers had the 90 seconds. If you don't score in that first 90 seconds, you got to win the faceoff and get right into the zone if you want to have a chance of scoring in the next 30. You lose that opening faceoff to the next period, that 30 seconds is wasted. I hate it. You should just be able to play the period out and then have a penalty. You should have the full 2 minutes at the start of the next period. They should be like, nope, not giving it to you here. You need a full 2 minutes. But the penalty kill's been great, and the power, I mean, listen, I think on the special teams, they're still excellent. They need Igor to be the best goalie on the ice. He wasn't in game one. He wasn't bad, but he let up a softie and then had just a horrendous mistake. He needs to be the best goaltender in this series. Otherwise, I don't, you know, that's an advantage they have to have. And even with Matt Rempe, I still don't think they have the advantage of being the more physical team. He's not Paul Bunyan. He's not, you know, greasing up a Skittle with enormous pads of butter on his feet. Like, this is not, I don't understand. I don't understand what we think he's capable of.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
1, 2, 3.
Do-da-da.
You know why this song reminds me of summer? I know this is silly, but when I was a kid, for whatever reason, one of my favorite movies was Joe versus the Volcano with Tom Hanks. I don't know if you remember that movie, Joe versus the Volcano. It's kind of like this guy who's like, what's the term for someone who always thinks they're sick?
Hypochondriac.
So you got this guy, Joe, who's like a hypochondriac, played by Tom Hanks. He's always convinced something's wrong with him. So like his boss tips off this millionaire or something, and the millionaire tells him this lie that he's got this terrible disease that he's going to die from, and he needs someone to go and sacrifice himself in some volcano so that the people who live on the volcano will allow him to use the land for something. I forget what it is. But this rich guy convinces him that he needs to go sacrifice himself in this volcano, and in the meantime, until you get there, I'm going to give you all this money, you're going to have this great vacation, you're going to have this great adventure, and then at the end of it, you jump into the volcano. This is the movie. And there's a scene, it's summer, it's fishing. I've never been like fishing before in my life. And for some reason, there's a scene, that song's playing, it's Meg Ryan, it's Tom Hanks, they're fishing, he catches like a hammer shark or something, and he's, you know, it's on the boat and he's almost getting eaten by a shark. It's just a fun scene. It always makes me think of summer. I don't know why. So there you go, a little Good Lovin' by the Rascals. 888-808-1019. We'll get to some more contemporary music, I know. Chris, you're 40. Why are you playing songs from the 60s? Because that's what I like. I don't know what to tell you. Why are you playing the Beach Boys? Because the Beach Boys are awesome. That's why. I'm playing Jimmy Buffett because he is the epitome of summer. I'm playing Bob Marley because that his Jamaican vibe is summer. And Good Lovin' because Tom Hanks had to jump into a volcano. And I remember it fondly. Because I know what he's talking about. Because these lights are sucking the out of my eyes, too. These fluorescent lights. They're tough. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. That's the new number. Get used to it. It ain't going nowhere. Neither is Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is going nowhere. Daniel Jones is the quarterback of the New York Giants. Get used to it, Chris. I'm trying. And it sounds like he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Not much, just enough. Just the right amount. As, you know, he was asked about the idea of a team. Now, listen, he's not the fresh new quarterback paid $100 million and brought over here from Minnesota like Kirk Cousins, only to find his team drafting a quarterback in the first round. Daniel Jones has got to have some awareness that he's done a lot of losing despite being talented enough to lead a team to the playoffs, win a playoff game against Minnesota. By the way, right after that, they got their asses kicked in Philadelphia. People forget that. I just want to remind everybody that, you know, the season didn't end there. They didn't win that Minnesota game, and then Daniel Jones get carried off on the team's shoulders off into the sunset like Rudy. There was a game the next week. And, you know, Daniel Jones didn't show up, nor did anybody else. But despite the fact that he was talented enough to do that and earn a contract, he has to be aware that over the tenure of his Giant career, he's done a lot of losing, and now he's done a lot of waiting around rehabbing. As he's had neck issues that ended his season, he's had ankle issues, he's had now obviously blown out knee, he's had all kinds of issues. So it's not the same as what Kirk Cousins had to do, or even Aaron Rodgers, who's a Hall of Fame quarterback, Super Bowl winner, watching someone get drafted instead of helping him get ready for a season and help him with an offensive weapon. Daniel Jones had to be prepared for the idea that at the very least, the Giants would be looking to move on from him or be prepared to move on from him. This is the business, and I think he understands that. But I will say this. I do think an annoyed Daniel Jones and a motivated Daniel Jones, and maybe a pissed off Daniel Jones a little bit more, because the last time he was motivated, and I saw Connor Hughes say this, and I think it's a fair point, the last time he was motivated to get a contract, the last time he was motivated to make sure he was still in the NFL after the Giants did not pick up his fifth-year option, he did have the best year of his career. That is fair. I still don't think it was much of a year. I think it was a lot on his legs, which is a tool set, no doubt, and we've seen quarterbacks use it to varying levels of success. But especially now with the idea that I don't trust him getting hit because of his neck injury. And I just don't trust him being as dynamic with his legs due to his knee injury. I no longer view the running aspect of his game as something that I could live with being the best part of his game. Daniel Jones, the best part of his game for the beginning of his career here has been his legs. It was underutilized under previous coaches, was figured out finally by Brian Daboll, used to excess, and used to victories. And the idea of, hey, drop back, look your first read, maybe your second read. If it's not there, tuck it and run, baby. I think that helped him immensely and got the best out of him. It limited his turnovers, and it got the best out of him. But ultimately, I don't think that tool set, while I'm not saying is completely gone, it can't be his best tool set. He has got to be a pocket passer, and he's got to be someone who can ride that fine line, because what we've seen from Daniel Jones is the two extremes. The two extremes of Daniel Jones are what we saw, and I just mentioned in his best season, of hardly any turnovers and any interceptions. And then there's the extreme of trying to make things happen, being careless with the football, both fumble-wise and interception-wise. But there's got to be a fine line where he's willing to take chances, because I felt like in the good year where he played his best football, so quick to run, was afraid to take chances, was afraid to get the ball down the field. And that's why, and then even last year with his poor play, we saw Tyrod Taylor come in and get the ball down the field much better. And I think it's because Daniel Jones is afraid of making the mistake. Daniel Jones has a little bit of that, whatever you want to call it, fear of being hit. And, you know, punch drunk wants to come to mind, but I don't know if that's the right term. But like just has the yips a little bit about being feared to get hit because his offensive line has been weak and he's been hit so much. And you've got to overcome that and be willing to still take chances down the field. Because I no longer trust the running game, because one, I'm afraid I'll lose him anytime he takes a decent hit, especially one around the neck and head area. And two, I don't know what his leg is going to be like. Sure, he's healthy enough to play, but is he, you know, we've seen running backs, I know it's a different position and a different amount of cutting and physical contact and being hit. You know, you're not expecting Daniel Jones to do much after contact, where running backs you would expect after contract. And we've really only seen Adrian Peterson. And maybe last year, I'll be honest, with Breece Hall did a nice job, but Adrian Peterson's the shining example of coming back immediately from an ACL and being dynamic and as good as he ever was. But Daniel Jones, as a quarterback, still making cuts, like, it's going to take time before he trusts it completely. There's going to be, it's not going to be there the same. So he's got to develop into his arm and the passing ability, and especially now they got neighbors. Like, they've got I still think Wandell Robinson is a shifty wide receiver who can give you that quick option and get the ball in his hands and let him do some yak work, as opposed to getting down the field with Hyatt and neighbors. Like, they have a couple of different dynamics. We'll see if the tight end retires. I have no idea what's going on with that. But if Waller plays, I mean, theoretically, if he's healthy, another guy who came here and is a massive disappointment. But there are some weapons here, and he's got to be able to utilize them. But this is it for Daniel Jones. I hope he recognizes that. Just like it was 2 years ago when they decided not to pick up his fifth-year option, when he was playing out there with no safety net, and he had to make it, or he was not going to be the quarterback for the Giants, or he was not going to be a quarterback in the NFL, or he was going to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. Whatever the case may be, he went out there, had a good regular season and a great two games, the last game of the regular season and then the playoff game against Minnesota. And if he can get back to being that player, the Giants might have a chance to be somewhat successful, as we saw Burns in camp as well. And the idea of him and Kayvon Thibodeau with this new defensive scheme, that as much as I liked Wink Martindale, I hated how the pass rushers were used in his scheme. I hated how Kayvon Thibodeau was dropping back into pass coverage as much as he was. And I feel better about this new defensive coordinator and the new defensive scheme. And now you add Burns and you're talking about him and Thibodeau having this, you know, rivalry, this friendly rivalry, this friendly competition. Plus, we all know what Dexter Lawrence is. That defensive front might be pretty damn good. Now, they're young and inexperienced, which go together. in the defensive backfield, and that could be an issue. But defensive front should be pretty damn good. And this offensive line is going to be a little bit revamped, hopefully a healthy Andrew Thomas to go along with the additions they made and, you know, year three of Evan Neal. But they're going to have to work on a run game. They're going to have a healthy Daniel Jones, and they're going to have to utilize their wide receivers for the first time in forever. But this is it. This is it for Daniel Jones. There is no more. I don't want to hear anymore. I don't want to talk anymore. I don't want to. There's nothing else to say, but let's see what he does. And my fear is that it's going to be what I think, and that he's going to get hurt or he's not going to play well. We're going to see Drew Lock play games for the New York Giants, and they're going to have a miserable season because I don't know how good the roster is overall, and they're going to be right back at the top of the draft. They might lose their coach. They might lose their GM who drafted and developed Josh Allen, and now they might be onto a new regime who I don't know if I have confidence in drafting and developing a quarterback, and they'll be attacking that position from not an avenue of strength because this draft, although I'm sure a quarterback will pop up here or there that we don't even know is going to be on the radar right now, but he'll be there at the top of the draft next year. It'll be a less heavy quarterback draft, and I don't know who'll be making the decision. So I'm very concerned about where the Giants are from a roster standpoint. I'm very concerned by where the Giants are from an overall, you know, scheme standpoint. I'm concerned where the Giants are and who's leading the franchise. And I'm very concerned at where they are at the quarterback position and where they are for the future. Because those two things are synonymous. Your quarterback and your future are the same thing. And as long as Daniel Jones is the quarterback, for me, the future is limited. So I hope he's pissed off. I hope he recognizes where he is in his career. I hope he understands he's fighting to continue to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, if not for the Giants. And I hope we get the best of him. But even that, his previous best relied so much on his running ability, and now I'm afraid for him with that knee. I don't know how well he can cut. I don't know how dynamic he's going to be with his legs. And having his neck pop up again last year for the second time in his career, I'm concerned every time he takes a hit. It's a troubling combination for your starting quarterback. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Kenny in New Jersey. What's up, Ken?
Hello?
Hello, Kenny.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right. So, two things. All right, the first thing, couple of summer songs for you.
Okay.
Summertime by Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Yes, of course.
Okay, and the other one, this is, remember Kokomo by the Beach Boys?
Do I remember Kokomo? Every time my wife laments the idea that we don't take enough vacations, she will somehow reference Kokomo. The woman loves Kokomo. She never lets me forget it. So, yes, I know Kokomo.
It's a good song.
It's a great song. I love Kokomo.
Yeah,
of course Kokomo is a great song. And then plus, like, you know, Uncle Jesse played the drums on it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, so the other thing I want to talk about is Daniel Jones. I'm a huge Giants fan. Huge Giants fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have no faith in Daniel Jones anymore.
I don't know how you could. I really don't. I don't understand anyone who has real faith in him. I mean, do I believe he has some ability? Of course. Do I think he's a bum? No. Do I think he's got arm strength and some accuracy and clearly some wheels? He did prior to this season. We'll have to see. But ultimately, they don't win. He never gets the ball to wide receivers. And again, I know he hasn't had a world-class wide receiving core. I've seen quarterbacks get the ball to wide receivers no matter who they're throwing to. In this league, it's very difficult to play defensive back. You get wide receivers get open and you can get them the ball, and he never gets them the ball. But, I mean,
right.
It's just, it's been a lot of losing. I don't have, you know, people have this, and I've been making this argument for both him and Saquon Barkley. The passion that a lot of the fan base shows for those two guys boggles my mind because they've done zero winning. Zero. I mean, they are the face of the worst era in Giants football since the 1970s, and yet we feel like we have to cling to them and hold on to them and move heaven and earth to make sure they're still on the team. I don't get it. So
I don't know if they were the worst, because I remember those Dave Brown years.
This was worse than Dave Brown.
You think so?
Record-wise, yeah. I mean, how many seasons were dead? I mean, I remember at least, you know, having some interest in those Dave Brown teams. These teams were dead. They were dead by Halloween. Yeah. I mean, they would get off to these 0-4, 1-5 starts year after year. It was just, it was atrocious. Yeah. I'm not saying Dave Brown is better than Daniel Jones. I'm not. But that era of football wasn't as bad. I don't know. It just wasn't. Dan Reeves was a legitimate head coach. You know, they had no head coach. They had no team. Like, it was just a disaster.
Right, right. The other thing is that when people talk about the one good year that Daniel Jones had, the way I see it, that particular year, he was just he was being extremely careful with everything he did.
Yes, 100%.
You know, I don't think that was all. You know, it was a good year, but to be that careful in everything he did, it wasn't impressive. I'm just done with him.
Yeah, listen, Kenny, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I don't view that year as impressive. I view two games. I'm not kidding. Two games. Now, he had a couple of touchdowns against the Bears. Some rushing touchdowns against the Bears. That was a decent game from him. But ultimately, you're right. How I view Daniel Jones' season 2 years ago when they made the playoffs and won that game, he was okay after he got screamed at in week one to not make mistakes in the red zone by Brian Daboll, that famous moment where he was on the camera caught Brian Daboll in his face. From that moment on, he was extremely careful, and he didn't turn the ball over. They made just enough plays, mainly in the running game, both him and Saquon Barkley in the running game, made just enough plays, and the defense was just good enough and made big plays down the stretch of games where, if you remember, they came from behind down 10 points against Baltimore, 10 points against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers out in London. They would hold on to every game was ugly. They did just enough to win. He really didn't get to the wide receivers. He didn't throw touchdown passes, but he played all right, and he played mistake-free football. Not just mistake-light football, mistake-free football. So they never beat themselves, and they allowed other teams to beat themselves. They hung around. They won just enough games, and then at the end of the year, the offense started to peak. At the very end of the year, he started with what was the wide receiver they picked up from Buffalo doesn't matter. Hodges.
Isaiah Hodgins.
Isaiah Hodgins, yeah. At the very end, him and Hodgins started to get it together. They played well. That final game of the regular season against the Colts, he was great. And then in the playoff game against Minnesota, he was great. He was average. He was mistake-free. The defense and the running game were winning these tight, ugly, muck-em-up games. They snuck into the playoffs. Just at the end of the season, the offense finally scored 30 with the Colts for the first time in on like two calendar years. Finally scored 30. And they peaked at the right moment and caught the worst 12-13 win football team we've ever seen in that Minnesota team. The quarterback made made a horrible mistake at the end of the game, and Daniel Jones played terrific for two games. And then he went right back into being a pumpkin against Philadelphia in that next round. And then we all know what happened from the beginning of last year. That's how I view Daniel Jones. And his season was okay, didn't make any mistakes, didn't limit the mistakes. Didn't make any, was the best in the league at not making mistakes. He was also the best in the league at not taking chances, not throwing the ball down the field, and not scoring points. And then at the end, he figured it out a little bit. They got a little bit hot, and he had two good games against the Colts and against Minnesota. Dan in Manhattan. What's up, Dan?
Chris, I think the people who think they have faith in Daniel Jones have more hope in Daniel Jones.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, faith is a tough thing to have from Daniel Jones. It just is.
Yes. I got a one-hit wonder 70s summer song for you, Beach Baby.
I don't know it.
Oh, First Class.
First Class.
I think it's right in your wheelhouse.
I'll check it out.
And such an underrated movie, Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah, I loved it. When I was a kid, I loved Joe.
I watch it anytime it's on.
I love
Joe. You got the brain cloud.
You got the brain cloud, right? He's got a brain cloud. You got a brain cloud.
Meg Ryan playing three different parts.
Yeah.
It was real. And then the one scene you were talking about, the Good Lovin' scene.
Yeah.
When he was in the ocean on the suitcases.
Great. Yeah.
And he was singing that "Come Go With Me." He was yep. doing that little dance.
Yep.
What a great scene that
was.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really fun movie.
Yeah.
Fun
when
movie.
He went definitely a fun movie when the ship, you know, capsizes and sinks, and he's got his, you know, the expensive luggage that he bought, and he's got Meg Ryan just unconscious, laying on the luggage with him that's floating, and that he's got one bottle of like Perrier water, and he's giving her like little capfuls, and he's playing the ukulele at night. It's great. I really enjoy Joseph versus the Volcano. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I do love that movie, and I love that scene. It makes me think of summer for some reason. But that was like right at the beginning of Tom Hanks, right before he became, you know, everybody's favorite actor. I know for some reason that might become a political point right now to say that. And it's weird. Life is weird. But like he had that stretch of those movies where he was pretty much a comedian. I mean, from the beginning of his career, we're breaking down Tom Hanks' career. Everybody ready? 888-808-1019 here on The Fan. Tom Hanks was a comedian. He's got Bosom Buddies. He's got Splash. He's got Bachelor Party. He's got Money Pit. He's got The Burbs. Like, it's all these comedies. And then his life changed. And then he's like in a rut, and a lot of the comedies fail. Turner and Hooch. Like, all those movies don't do well. Probably including Joe versus the Volcano, which is his first movie with Meg Ryan. He ends up making a whole bunch. And then he gets A League of Their Own. And A League of Their Own kind of rejuvenates his career. The great Jimmy Dugan, classic role. I heard Lopresti the other day on the warm-up show reference my favorite line in all of any sports movie history. When Dottie quits at the sort of end, right before the World Series, and she quits, and what Jimmy Dugan says to her is by far the greatest line in every sports movie. There's nothing better than Jimmy Dugan when she says, it just got too hard. And he says, it's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everybody would do it. The hard is what makes it great. There's nothing better. It's the greatest line in any sport movie ever. It's even better than the rant that Kevin Costner goes on in Bull Durham about liking long, wet kisses. And that's a nice little moment. The hard is what makes it great, is the best. And then he gets Philadelphia and Forrest Gump, and away he goes. We can always break down actors. You know I love doing it on these five-hour midnight rides. Music, movies, anything else. Rock and roll. That's what rock and roll. We'll play some rock and roll coming back. 888-808-1019. That's the new number. Give me a call. We got 1 hour left of our five-hour midnight ride. Taking you until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Live from Belmar, New Jersey. DJs out on the Jersey Shore for the official kickoff to summer party. We do it every year. It's the pancake breakfast. We do it every month. We do it every year. It's the best party of the year. I love it. I'm going to try and get there. If not, you should go. Join, I forgot his name, but there's someone in the parking lot right now listening to me break down Tom Hanks' career, getting ready for the morning show and waiting for DJs to open up the door. So you can have a Bloody Mary and hear Al and Jerry go at it about topics that Al finds interesting and Jerry doesn't. I can't wait.